Across the Park podcast is proud to be sponsored by Globe Gas and Heating. For the best kitchen and bathroom renovations, boiler servicing and repair, and central and underfloor heating in the Northwest, head over to globecentralheating.com and quote Across the Park for a free quote. Hello, welcome to Across the Park podcast episode 28 of season 23-24. My name is Ian Mills, joined by always my partner Gary Judge. As the season heats up, the must wins start here. We're going to get into that. But before we talk on the pitch, we're going to do what we've always done this season. Off the pitch first, because it's just as important. Judge, you bringing you in. The Premier League have replied to the fan advisory board. Summarising why 777 haven't been approved yet. Dave Kelly from the Fan Advisory Board signed his name on the letter, asking the questions as to what the hell's going on. We need answers. It's not fair, which I agree with. They came back summarising and summarising that something's not quite right.
Wasn't specific, was it?
Look, we've spoke 777, so what do you make of this whole thing now where Richard Masters is now writing back to Fan Advisory Board saying they're not yet approved? It's just, for me, it's so messy now.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, they summarise, but all they really summarise is their position, don't they?
Yeah.
And the rules themselves and the instances where a potential buyer would be authorised or not authorised to go through with the purchase. So they're suggesting, you know, indirectly but somewhat specifically, that they're not satisfied with certain people in positions of influence. So they haven't said exactly what it was, who it was, why it was. They've also suggested that the funds that
they
presented were not particularly reliable or not firm enough.
But we heard this last year when they first approached us. We heard, and I'm talking to cause a scene here if they do approach us, and I'm going to blacklist the podcast. But we heard it's dodgy. We heard this 12 months ago. So this is nothing new, is it?
No, it's not. But again, I think what's important about the statements that have been made by Richard Masters, which is somewhat assuring, is that the Premier League won't allow them to proceed unless they believe they've got certain security or the club have got a degree of security around the funds available. It seems to me, based on reading in between the lines, but I think he's been quite, for a change, been quite clever in the way he's written it. They've give 777 an opportunity to come back to them with another solution, and they haven't been given that solution yet. He does state, which I think is a bit strange, that there's no timeline on this. There's no deadline. So, which I guess would be surprising, given that there's a club's future that's hanging in the balance.
Well,
here,
it goes back to my point that we knew all this. Mm. Like, I could have told Richard Masters that they're not whiter than white. Mm. You could have told Richard Masters and the Premier League these guys aren't whiter than white.
Yeah,
why are we
from
September to
in
April?
Fairness, it was all, everything we were hearing was hearsay and rumour, wasn't it? So all the Premier League, and again, I'm not an advocate or a fan of the Premier League, far from it, as most Evertonians won't be, but in the defence here, what they're saying is Everton as a football club have presented this as a deal they want to push through. So as a member of the Premier League are obliged to take that on face value and to examine it as they would any other.
For seven months.
Yeah, but again, they've said that the reasons why a deal like this wouldn't go through are the following. They haven't said this is a reason why 777, but they've said these are the following reasons why we wouldn't sanction a deal like this. We can pick from a suite there of which one of those apply to 777. It could be that all of them apply to 777. He's been asked to explain why it hasn't been sanctioned and what the timeline is to being sanctioned. And in fairness, he's answered that. He said, these are the reasons why we would not back a deal. And that said, we would go back to the party and we would offer them the chance to come up with solutions to these potential problems. The worrying thing, and taking it out of the Premier League here, and I think that's important to do so, the concerning thing is that 777 have not been able to satisfy those criteria still, have they? So that's why it's gone on for 7 months, and that's why Evertonians should be more fearful, if they're not already, of 777. Because if this was a simple conversation here where it's the same as, like, for instance, your solicitor sitting in the middle while someone's trying to buy your house, your solicitor has to be confident that the person on the other side has got the money to actually purchase it before they start drawing contracts up. That's what they're doing here. They're sitting in the middle going, okay, we're going to ask this party, that solicitor's going to ask the buyer certain questions to make sure that the funds are legitimate. So you provide your mortgage offer, you know, your proof of funds for the deposit, et cetera, et cetera. They can't do them basic things. And what the Premier League is saying is there isn't a timeline to this, but if they don't satisfy the criteria, then they don't get sanctions.
But we heard this when Masters was in Commons against all these people in January. He was saying all this 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Like, I'm repeating myself, actually, the question. It's unanswerable, I know.
That's 777's problem, though, isn't it? What I'm saying is that
there should be a cut-off. The Premier League now should say there's a deadline now.
Well, that's not the Premier League's place. That's Everton's place to be setting a deadline. Premier League's agenda. That's not their place to do that. Their place is to make sure that the clubs who are part of their membership are being ran by responsible people who've got funds to deliver the objectives of that club and to keep them in the Premier League without going into administration. Our current ownership haven't got that. We know that now because there's no funds that Moshiri's got that's coming in. We know that we're being propped up by loans and lending from various different people, including 777. Loans and lending to clubs are not the same as actually controlling the club. They currently don't control the club, yet the lending that they're providing to the club is putting them into a position where they'll almost be indirectly in control of the club.
But I think the Premier League could save some face here. I don't mean with Evertonians, I mean with the whole thing. By just being a bit more clearer, the current situation is we've asked for X, Y, and Z. We've got half of X.
But it should be Everton now providing that clarity, mate. Not
but the letter was to the Premier League. So we also...
But the Premier League... Could
say that, though.
No, the Premier League are not legally obliged to be telling fans about the ins and outs of a deal that a club had presented to them. Everton had presented the deal to the Premier League, not the other way around. It's not like the Premier League have found as a buyer and went, there they are. In that instance, you'd be saying to the Premier League, what's going on with this buyer you put forward? Everton / Farhad Moshiri have found the potential buyer. It should be Everton that provide the clarity and not the Premier League.
Okay, so on that point, the Fan Advisory Board again wrote to Farhad Moshiri.
Yeah,
and they asked Farhad Moshiri for clarity.
Yeah, and he's the person who should be providing the clarity.
We got a very wish-washy, and the club won't like this, but it's a wish-washy. Yeah. I'm at the point of not caring now. Mm. With respect to 777, my view has not changed. I think they're the right owners with a multi-club ownership to go forward. I'm pointing to the stadium as, look what I've done for you. I'll meet with you soon. Yeah. We're not getting anything from anybody. Like Josh Wander pipes in, he says the same thing as always.
Yeah, but
it just seems to be, it's winding me up now. We just seem to be in such an uncertain time off the pitch. And we've got questions on this, which I want to get to. But for me, someone has to give clear answers because no one is.
I know, but again, and I'm not defending the Premier League here. It's not their place to be explaining to our fans what the problems or the complexities of this deal are. It should
someone
be our
has
club.
To, though.
Yeah, someone has to, I agree. But it's the club. And you know, we went through all this when we were talking about the whole PSR thing, which we'll come back to in a second. There's a degree of accountability from the Premier League, obviously, for not enforcing rules, for changing rules, for not having clear communication on what the criteria is for this, that, and the other. But going back to the fundamentals, the club's been ran really poorly.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't be in that position. We wouldn't be wrestling with the Premier League. We wouldn't be calling them corrupt and this, that, and the other if it wasn't for the fact that our club was in a mess. So I think, and again, like you've just said, Dennis, this might put us in a more difficult position with the club, but you know they're not helping themselves. The club have got to be communicating. The fact that we're having to find out from the media that we're 1 week away from not having the money to pay the bills, and here comes 777 with another load of cash.
And that brings us cleverly onto the accounts. An £89 million loss the season after we get breached for £19.5 million. Now, the mitigation is the season we got breached for £19.5, the account showed £100 million. So we don't know what Everton have took to this. The appeal has been done already, or the hearing has been done, sorry. And Everton might say that figure is offset by investments in the women's, investments in the stadium, investments in whatever losses that we can write off.
I think
we're
led to believe that about 20 to 30 million of that can be offset and within the rules. And then you've got a little bit of still a percentage around, you're allowed to go over by so much, but it still brings us to around 50 million.
Well, so what I don't want to do, and feel free to do this, but I don't want to really focus on what the estimated loss can be, because I don't think we know.
I agree.
But what I will focus on is the wording in there that says, without investments from the current majority shareholder or a sale to potential new majority shareholders, there is a significant doubt on the ability to continue. It's terrifying.
There's got to be, hasn't it? Because, again, without being able to pinpoint exactly what the losses are that are not related to the stadium, because those losses won't necessarily... Well, they'd be realised in this accounting period, etc., and they have been, obviously, within the books, but they may not continue as and when the stadium's finished, and that's an obvious thing to say, isn't it?
Mm.
So a lot of them will go away, and the stadium, in a year's time or beyond that, will start to monetize, and we'll start to be able to, you know, sell off retail units, etc., etc. So we will be in a position soon to start to monetize that, but that's still 18 months away. You know, realistically, on a regular basis.
It's two more accounting years away.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the big concern. I don't think it took a mathematician or a genius to work out that statement, because the fact that we're having to be funded now by loans from 777 just to continue trading, to continue meeting payroll and various other creditors we've got, I think that was an obvious thing. There certainly needs to be a priority right now, given that the state that we're in. Someone within that club has got to start looking at restructuring the debt in some way, coming up with terms, different terms with creditors. Nobody likes administration, by the way, and that includes the people who we owe money to, because there's a chance then that they only get pennies on the pounds.
Right.
Nobody wants that. So somebody in there, and this would normally be the CFO, should be now, if they haven't already, starting to put in deals of deferred interest, deferred payments, like anyone would if they were in a position of going into
bankruptcy. I can't afford to pay you back, you're screwed, really.
Yeah, exactly, Ed. And you know, people get into this situation every single day. So it's not an uncommon thing to happen. So I'm not saying it's any less alarming, by the way. It's not. It's a terrible, terrible situation to be in. And if you're ever in this position as a person, then you'll know that. It's like the, oh God, I'm going to have to face it now. I buried my head in the sand. I'm now going to have to face it. I'm going to have to look at all my debts, look what I can afford to pay, and try and ask some of these lenders whether they're happy to just delay or defer some of these payments, you know, freeze the interest, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to have to start looking at that. We've obviously got a number of players that are out of contract in the summer. We've got a number of players that we can sell in the summer. All of those things will be on the table now.
I think it's very likely that we're going to have to sell numerous players.
Oh, without doubt, yeah. I think, you know...
The Gordon money didn't offset that. We sold Gordon and didn't replace him. We all thought, at least...
Pay some interest.
Yeah,
it literally exactly, pays interest for a few months on some of the lending that we've already made. So, you know, we're as that statement and as the numbers go, we're some way off that. But I think the big thing I take from it, and further to your point around the communication of the club, this is the time when you would expect, after something like that, a CFO to come out and go, this is the plan. This is what we're doing behind the scenes. Doesn't have to be telling us the ins and outs, but things like, yeah, we are restructuring the debt, we are doing this, we are expecting this to come in, we are expecting that to come in. You maybe don't want to be conceding too much, because it puts you in a position of weakness when you're trying to negotiate sales, doesn't it? If you turn around and say, we need to make 200 million this summer, suddenly you've got people going, well, let's offer them 20 million for Pickford. Let's see what happens. Let's offer them 25 for Branthwaite instead of the 50 or 60 that you should be talking about. So it's a balance. But you would like to think that all these things are going on now to try and secure the short-term future of the club.
That's why I want to start the show. We've got three methods of communication. Josh Wanza, Farhad Moshiri, Richard Masters, I'm no clearer. And it's getting to a point now. Look, me and you spoke in the week, because we've seen that the criteria for the MSP loan means that if it's possibly not paid back by mid-April, they can get a controlling stake in Everton, which would be greater than Farhad Moshiri's. Whether they would want to own Everton with all that comes with it,
not own Everton, it's 25%, isn't it?
No, it'll take it's more than Moshiri's. So Moshiri would become them not a minority, but less than MSP. That's on the table. 777 is on the table. If 777 don't get approved, it's very, very likely they stop lending us money, which results in the potential of administration. What I'm getting at is we're at the end of the Fahad Moshiri era. How bad has it been?
Yeah, with hindsight, it's been horrendous, hasn't it? I mean, like anything, and I always try and compare like football to business and relationships. It's like, you know, you get with a partner, and you've got all these ideas. We're going to buy a house. We're going to have kids. We're going to, you know, create this amazing future together, and everything you can possibly imagine just doesn't come off, and it gets worse and worse, and you end up, you know, on the streets. She cheats on you. She's not he or she, depending on what boat you're in. And yeah, you look back and think, what was I thinking? What was I doing? How was I not seeing the signs? How was I not like, because again, we were all sitting there enjoying the fact that all this money was getting, and all these wages.
Here comes Klassen and Keane and Balassi.
And we kept on saying to me, we don't care, it's not our money.
Here comes Walcott, here comes Tosin, here comes Sigurdsson.
Didn't care about the money, did we? We were like, and go again, any Evertonian who's going to say that he were sitting there shaking their heads and frowning and is lying. And I know they're all coming out the woodworks now, and we're obviously sitting here saying it's terrible what the club have done and blah, blah, blah. But that said, it was exciting at the time. But, you know, with hindsight, back to your question, it's been horrendous. And you know, we look back when we were kids, we were brought up kind of the Peter Johnson era where it was like the club were constantly in turmoil. Actually, wasn't this bad, though.
No.
Wasn't this bad.
No.
So, yeah, and it doesn't help that obviously the team on the pitch are in a pretty horrendous position as well.
We are going to talk football. You'd be happy to know. After a quick word from our sponsors, if you are selling property, give these guys a click.
Tick Property Group are your local Liverpool-based estate agents with over 300 five-star reviews on Trustpilot. By selling your home now for an unbeatable offer of £497, your home will be advertised across all major portals, including Rightmove and Zoopla. You will also receive professional photography, floor plans, and a bespoke stylish video tour of your home. So take the stress out of selling and let Tick Property Group be your personal estate agent. Book your free valuation today and quote Across the Park to receive a 10% fee discount.
Click on Tick. I'm going to hashtag that. Click on Tick. Didn't even mean a big thank you to Claire, one of the amazing owners of the Pod Cafe, for doing the voiceover for that. But yeah, Tick Property Group, a massive sponsor of the Cross the Park podcast. Get over there for under £500. You're on Rightmove. Floor plans, photos, the lot. We've also had a bit of feedback from them that a couple of you guys have already used them and quoted Across the Park podcast, which is fantastic. So me and Judgy, thank you so much for that. Getting over as well to Globe Gas and Heating, the first sponsor on this show. You'll see that advert at the very first intro. Brilliant toffee called Lee, who's around the city, busy as always, doing bathrooms, boilers, kitchens, the lot. Getting over, make sure you quote Across the Park podcast, because he let us know when you do it as well. It's great for us to have that. We are also affiliated with Manscaped. Judgy's not brought the trimmer in this week, but I'm just going to let you know. Get over to manscaped.com. There's numerous male grooming products over there that can make you and your partner feel a lot better about going to bed early. 20% quote Across the Park podcast. Well, Across the Park actually is the code. Quote that for 20% over at Manscaped. Judgy, the Newcastle result, you were there. sent me a few pictures of you enjoying the executive lounge there, which seems to be a bit of a treat. But first of all, how did you get in the exec lounge, because you've done this a few times this season. I don't know who you know, but you're getting in these places.
The Newcastle one was actually a client of ours who's a big Newcastle fan, and he got a big contract with my work at the start of the year, which, you know, I was part of helping him get and stuff. So he said, look, every season I've got this contract, you're coming to the game with
sounds
me. So, you know, some could say it's a conflict of interest, but, you know, he's got to perform to keep the contract anyway. So if he performs, I'm happy. And yeah, again, if he keeps his contract, I'm also happy because I'll get to go the game.
Did you declare that to HR, that he give you that gift?
No, I didn't, but I sent him a picture.
You have to now.
No, just briefly on that one. Obviously, we spoke about the stadium and again, try and... Like Moshiri's done in his letter, sprinkle a little bit of potential optimism. The lounges they've got there in Newcastle, and this is one of the newer ones they built called the Wings, I think it was called, and it was like a 6-star hotel. Nice. It was ridiculous from the moment you walked in, the like Michelin star style food, and you're the service, like you don't leave it alone, they're just constantly, you know, they drink, you want to eat. Service was unbelievable. There was actually loads of blues in it though, you know, as well. Loads of blues.
You said that you were surrounded by a few blues.
Like 50-50,
yeah.
But when we actually went out and sat in the seats, which are in the Gallagate, which is obviously their big end. Well, not the biggest stand, but it's their main home end. We're at the back of the Gallagate, and there was me, the guy I was with, who was a Newcastle fan, next to him was a Newcastle fan, and then it was five or six Evertonians to me right. So when Everton scored, obviously it was a bit awkward, the jerseys went.
But you can see the potential in what Everton can do. Oh,
mate. And again, I've...
Match-going fans like you, who will one or two times a year, or three or four, will spend that money.
Well, that's it. The jerseys I was speaking to, there was only a few of them who said they had season tickets, and you could see they had season tickets, they had money just flowing from them. But the others were saying, yeah, this is, you know, going once this season. I mean, it was a lot of money, but wow, what, like the best hospitality experience I've ever had, and that includes, like, you know, race meetings and so on. So unreal. They've done it well. But when I thought and done the math in my head, because I knew how much this guy paid for the tickets, in this lounge alone, on this one given night, they must have made about $250,000, which is not far off what we probably take from a match day.
Yeah.
You know, after all the costs. So, and that was a lounge of, you know, a few hundred people. So,
and the club being Everton have apparently sold an awful lot, if not all, the hospitality already. So you can see just getting there.
Yeah.
What it can do. But look, the Newcastle game on the pitch, first half, I just thought it was just boring.
It was dreadful, yeah.
Boring game, 1-0 down. We don't get away with one. I don't mean it was onside, but we get away with a decision where we could have been 2-0 down. Substitutions, I was guilty of going like for like again, but they actually worked. They were more positive. When you look at the detail, they were more positive players on the pitch. What did you make of, first of all, the first half performance, the substitutions, and then the comeback?
First half was abject, to say the least. I just thought we paid kind of lip service to them. And I looked at the team sheet, and again, sitting with a guy who's a Newcastle fan, and he showed me the team that they got that wasn't available, like 14 players.
Did a lot out, yeah.
Yeah, they had a team that would have beat us on that night that weren't available, full team. And we actually looked through it man for man. I actually thought, and he agreed with some exceptions, we had a better 11 players out there. So really, you would expect at least them to just take a little bit of authority. And there was none of that. We sat back. We allowed them to play. Paul Beto was starved just on, like, balls getting hit up to him and chasing things down. And even the one, the balls that did go up to him, he wasn't particularly good at making it stick. It was a poor performance, and again, I've been outspoken about this person, but again, I think it's fair to credit him. Pickford was outstanding.
One thing you do
normally expect when we go and play Newcastle is for Pickford to lose his head, and the Newcastle fans try their best to go with him throughout the game. But I thought, given he made the mistake against Bournemouth last week, he's also come off the back of the big mistake he'd made for England. I thought he was outstanding.
He was, yeah.
And probably the best player on the pitch.
He got man of the match on TNT Sports. Yeah,
yeah. And he was the best player on the pitch, and that's for both teams. But again, I think Newcastle, and again, being surrounded by them, they felt that they should have been out of sight before we got the chance to make the triple change.
But it worked, didn't it? Let's be positive, it worked. Gomez and Garner were positive, and Lewin added a bit more. And
again, the benefit of, look, let's be fair to Sean's IT as well. Harrison was due to be dropped. He's been poor. Lewin hasn't scored for a long time. You can't argue with him being dropped.
Yeah.
But they are players who, on their day, have got more class than some of the players we had out.
James Garner was the one who I was surprised, because he seems a Dyche player, and Dyche just said no for tonight. I'm bringing Ashley Young in, and I'm bringing someone else.
Yeah, you know what? And he, you know, we were asking for, look, just try something else.
Yeah.
Try something different. And he tried that. It hasn't worked from the start, but, you know, for a change, he's been steadfast in making a triple change, as early as I've seen Sean Dyche make a change. Done it with three players, and it did change the game. They didn't have that, and that was the one thing we had in our armour. We actually had a better squad on the night than they did, and we were able to use that to our benefit. The irony being, you know, Dummett, who's a player who doesn't get no minutes at Newcastle, is the one who comes up with the shocking foul on Young for the penalty.
But he left there about 10 years ago. He only came on, I was like, are they that short?
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's been loads of, like, little memes knocking about with Chris Dummett when he gets the call up. He's like, what, me? You want me to go on? And he's like, he's a proper Geordie as well, isn't he? So I think he's like, yeah, anyway, he's he's given us the foul. But yeah, back to the changes, you know, full credit to him. Do you know one player I thought who hasn't really got a mention, and he come on a bit later, I think, as well, though, Chimiti, I thought was a breath of fresh air. Wirtz are, but he just looked like he has a bit more pace and a bit more energy and athleticism to him. He obviously gave away a bit of a soft foul, but it was a professional foul when they were potentially getting away. But I started to think, I wouldn't mind seeing him up there a little bit more and just having someone who can hurt the opposition running that way. So that it was nice to see him on the pitch.
Well, someone else said that. I was looking at the Twitter feed that evening, and someone else echoed what you said there. Like, instead of swapping Beto for Lewin every week, why don't you give Chimiti the minutes?
Yeah. I think he enjoyed being there, but being off the forwards. Because I think it's hard being a young player in this type of system, in a Sean Dyche system, where the ball comes up to you and you're expected to just hold and hold and hold and bring someone else in. You're an inexperienced target, man. It's maybe not what you want to be doing. You want to be on the, you know, on the front foot, and you want to be turning defences. I think the fact that someone else was doing that work and he was able to just run and be a bit more free. Look, it's not maybe the type of player that would be starting games and giving that level of freedom under Sean Dyche. But I think coming off the bench, he was a breath of fresh air.
And just to end the Newcastle segment of the show before we move on, this could be massive that Dominic Calvert-Lewin finds the net. Yeah. He said on the official media channels after it, he said the tap is on now. And I'll score more goals. We need him, don't we? We need that Dominic Calvert-Lewin scoring goals.
The timing couldn't be better. And you could say, well, the timing 10 games ago would have been better because we'd have picked up a hell of a lot more points. But we're going into a game at the weekend that, if you look at all our fixtures, it's the most winnable game. Like, you know, it's the last time we won was against Burnley. Mm-hmm. So it's no, that the irony's not lost on me either. But you look at it, Burnley at home. Just got a decent result at Newcastle. There's a little bit of confidence in there. Certain players maybe that felt, you know, right, I've put in a bit of a performance. Like Harrison, for example, has come off the bench and made a difference. Calvert-Lewin, as you say, he's got the goal. Here's a chance to go and, you know, go and get 2 or 3 against Burnley at the weekend and put down a bit of a marker and start to move the club in the opposite direction.
We'll zoom back to Burnley at the end of the show for a minute or two, because I know we've got a big preview.
Yeah,
with the TF cast, the Burnley fan site who've been on the channel before. A few socials, Judgy, to tackle. Paddy on Twitter, he's basically said, look, lads, no matter what, sack Dyche in the summer. I can't put up with this standard or style of football. It doesn't even get the results that Allardyce got. Go for Kieran McKenna and try and get a Moyes feel about the place back.
I mean, why was Kieran McKenna leave Ipswich? Look like they're going to go up in the automatics. I think they're currently top, aren't they? And join us in this predicament. I can't disagree with the listener, but I think to pick up a Kieran McKenna as a Premier League club, you need to do it before he's gone on that journey of getting a team promoted, in my opinion. I'm not turning around saying Ipswich are a bigger club and this, that and the other, but given it all of the turmoil and everything that's going on and everything he's had to face, I think he'd be mad to come and join Everton. But
the first half of that, I'm not saying that either of us want the manager sack, but can you understand fans now saying, like, whatever happens, let's press reset?
Yeah, and the things I heard at the match the other night, which were so concerning. I don't really want to repeat
it.
I don't really want to repeat it because
it's TSA, isn't it?
Yeah, it's TSA, but listen, there was photographic evidence here. It's not scandal, by the way. It's just general conduct that you just, they're unbecoming of a Premier League manager in the situation that we're in, and people can probably use their imagination and guess what it is. But that said, I think there's too many things that have gone on now and too much similarity in the cycle that we're going through with this type of manager. I think, listen, he's come in and he's done a solid job. And, you know, people will come back, as I've said, and look at if we had them 6 points, we'd be in a decent position and no one would be disappointed by being, you know, 14th in the league, given the squads we've got to work with. But they've been, I think there's been a few chances he's had to earn more stripes as an Everton manager. And I don't think he's took the risks that you would expect that type of manager to take.
Kenny on Twitter, Judgy, said the standard of our attacking players is dreadful. The players are simply poor. Do you agree that this absolutely has to be addressed this summer?
It's hard to see how it will be, isn't it? I think, you know, when you mention the likes of our attacking players are Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Doucouré, McNeil, Harrison, you can't reel that list off and be inspired, can you? none of them really come with goals regularly.
Are you telling me there's not a... I always side with the listeners here because I feel like I'm playing antagonist, but there's not a player in League One. There's not a player in Scotland.
Yeah, oh yeah, there is.
You can get for a couple of million.
And that's what I'm talking about. And that's not the manager who's being straddled with that comment, by the way, or the previous sentence I made about like not taking risk. It's also the recruitment team. You know, we've gone for, with the exceptions being probably Amadou Onana, maybe James Garner, because he, you know, although he was a Man United contracted player, he was still playing the Championship before we bought him. Amadou Onana was relatively unknown. Chimiti, maybe. But again, there are other clubs in this league. You look at Luton, for example, who are competing as well as we are in this league. They're not. They're 3 points behind us.
With Championship players.
With Championship players, yeah. And there's a lot of players in that team. Now you go, we take him. So there are some examples that we could follow. There's players that Burnley have took a gamble on. Okay, Burnley have not lit the league alight, but they've still got some players in that team that would probably walk into our team. So yeah, without doubt, I'm certain there is. There is also players that we're having to let go at the moment from the academy that I would hazard the guess would do better than some of the ones we've got in there. So it's bitterly disappointing, you know, to see the players in there getting regular football and us not have picked up players that we would probably say are more Everton.
So we've had the manager not good enough.
The players aren't good enough.
Now I've got a positive tweet for you to react to.
Okay.
So Jay on Twitter, so he's actually said, lads, a positive tweet for you to discuss, hopefully. Don't forget, we are 4 points above Luton. With a game in hand, we've got to play them as well. We've got Burnley and Sheffield United. Despite the possibility of another deduction, I think we'll be okay. Have I been drinking?
Probably, but I wouldn't disagree with any of that optimism, because if you're looking for reasons to be optimism, those are the points to recognise, really. And again, going off the back of what I've just said about the Newcastle game, look, only Saturday will tell you, won't it? Saturday, the proof will be in the pudding on Saturday. If we can, you know, put away Burnley fairly comprehensively and we get players on the score sheet, like Decore back on the score sheet again, Calvert-Lewin back on the score sheet again, McNeil or Harrison getting a goal or getting a couple of assists, that will do that team the world of good. And it could and should mean that we beat the likes of Sheffield United, Luton, etc. after that, or certainly get a result against Luton. You know, if we get another 3 or 4 point deduction, we're going to need 4 or 5 wins.
And they're the teams that I think he's right. They're the teams that we should
there's
get.
There's three potential wins there that you've identified. Two pretty certain ones. You know, you'd be devastated if we didn't beat Sheffield United and Burnley at home.
Don't get beat by Luton, don't get beat by Brentford.
That's it. And then you're probably one win away then from being safe, even with a deduction. So, no, listen, you put it into context. On the pitch, it's not as bad as, you know, it's not as bleak as maybe some people might have you believe. But that is, you know, you can't...
Optimism, it's the hope that kills.
But you can't make positive statements like that and then not mention the fact we haven't won since December. So you'd be going, well, why do you think... What, if you're a Burnley fan or a Luton fan or a Sheffield United fan, you'd be saying, why on earth do you think you've got the right to beat us when you haven't won since December? And that's a fair point as well. So, look, Saturday, without doubt, will be, I think, everything we need to know about this team and the chances of staying up. I'm going to put it on the record. If we get beat on Saturday, in fact, if we don't win on Saturday, I think we go down.
Wow, he's put on my toes there. Two quick more socials and we'll wrap it up. And if anyone hears Ninja Kids in the background, I'm sorry, my little boy's here playing his iPad, so I apologise for that.
We're going to get him up in a minute because he's our biggest fan.
Yeah, he can come and say hello. They're quick, Judgy. Liam said, I always enjoy you and trust your opinions. There's a lot of fake news out there, especially on Twitter. What's your understanding of the threat of administration? Is it scaremongering or realism?
I genuinely believe if we stay in the Premier League, we'll escape administration, assuming that there's some resolution around the ownership in some way, shape or form. I think anyone with any financial nous would be able to restructure some of the debt. I think if we get to the summer and we're able to sell some of our players, I don't realistically think that administration's on the cards, just because it's such a last case, worst case scenario. And I think there's too many potential assets that creditors could look to that will be realised in the future that will make them believe they're going to get paid by Everton. So for that reason, I don't think that administration, in my opinion, is an outcome, unless we get relegated. If we get relegated, I think it's inevitable. because there's not enough income that's coming in the short periods or even medium term periods into the club to stave off administration.
Look, me and Judge, you don't know the ins and outs, but my personal opinion is the football club needs a sale. This current majority shareholders stop putting money in. So unless the club is sold, I think we're in trouble. I also agree with Judge. If we go down, we're in big trouble. But if we can somehow get the ownership sorted and stay in the Premier League, I'm a Judgey, we should be okay. But we don't know that for sure. We're just saying. Last question, Judgey, from Chris. Pineapple on a pizza, yes or no?
No.
I'm with you. Absolutely not.
Blasphemy.
I'm with the Italians.
I actually don't mind pineapple in general, but not on a pizza. No. I don't like fruit on any food, like a savoury food, do you know what I mean?
I'm not with pineapple on a pizza.
You know what? Pineapple's actually not bad in sweet and sour chicken and stuff. Pineapple actually adds that little bit of sweetness to it. Don't mind it in that. You'll find a lot of chippies will put pineapple in sweet and sour, but not on a pizza.
We'll park that for the next show. You can bring the walk-in and start showing everyone where a pineapple fits in the diet.
Have you not seen pineapple in sweet and
not
sour?
Really, no, I go different places to you.
Yeah.
My fried rice costs £3, yours costs 13.
There's definitely pineapple in a decent sweet and sour. Let us know again if you're Chinese, puts pineapple in the sweet and sour chicken.
New question, like we're countering questions back. Yeah, now. Yeah. Countering questions back. Well, so
the point was, I think there's a place for pineapple in that particular dish, but no other.
We're going to end it with a quick Burnley preview very quickly, because Judgey will be talking to the TFCast this week. It's going to be out. We're recording now Thursday. By Friday, the TFCast podcast should be out. Talking to the good lads over there to talk about the Burnley game in more detail. But Judgey, must win.
Must win. Noah, come here. Put your iPad down. Come here. Come here. Because he watches. Come here.
He can come and say hello.
Our biggest fan of the podcast. Look in that camera. Say hello to the camera. Wave to the camera there. Noah's our biggest fan, and he said the other week that I'm his favourite person on the podcast.
Didn't pick his dad, he picked Judgey.
But how big a game is it this weekend, Noah? Good. It's a big game, isn't it? We need to win. What score is it going to be? Tell everyone.
1-0.
1-0? Who's going to score? Everton. Who's going to score for Everton? Which player?
Decore.
Wow, absolutely take that, but yeah. This weekend, this Saturday, is huge. As always, Blues, let's get behind the team. Let's get in nice and early. Let's get those banners up. Let's get the flags waving. Let's get behind the team. And let's
we've got 3 points. We've got a show. Go on, no, we can go play your iPad again now.
Cheers, mate.
Well done, mate. Star of the show. We've got a quick show again tomorrow with Peter Mack from the 1878. The 1878 have done a massive job with banners and flags. Wait till you see Goodison Park on Saturday. So we're going to do a quick show with him about that. Must win. I just want to say thank you to everyone at the Everton Women's Derby who came all over and said hello to me and Noah. There was just under 10,000 there, which is great for the women. Couldn't quite get over the line, but we're going to do a show at the end of April to preview the
good
Arsenal. Arsenal at home on the end of April. We're back down at Finch Farm to cover that. Big show's coming. Judgey's got another one now. We're going to be speaking to, should we name drop him?
Yeah, Chris Mason. Chris Mason is a famous actor now in his own right. He's on, you know, various Netflix Prime shows. Lives over in America, obviously close to Hollywood, and he's now started off his own little podcast, which is a bit of an interesting like MLS Premier League type medley, kind of acknowledging that no one really knows the MLS that well, and it's you know, but we're speaking to him. He's a big Evertonian. I grew up going the game with him. His dad still goes the game, etc. So we've got him on this afternoon. So. Helping spread the podcast love.
Boss, 3 big shows coming up before the Burnley game, and Burnley's huge. I'm hoping that me, Judgey, and Noah will be doing an instant match reaction with a smile on our faces. Until then, thanks for watching. Please like, share, and subscribe. When you ring our sponsors, name check us, and put this video in every Everton WhatsApp group that you're in. Thanks for watching, guys. Enjoy the rest of the Easter. Up the Toffees.